ميتكن ميتكن مدريتي نسي نمكورا هكاين.
Well, you're hearing the wonderful, wonderful voice of the late Ali Farka Touré with Amandrai. Ali Farka Touré was from Mali, considered one of the preeminent musicians of all time from Mali. Actually, is one of my favorites. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, the 21st of April, and we'll be taking a look at two subjects today, and let's get on with the first one first. Well, you know, the coverage continues nonstop on CNN of the great mysterious flight of Malaysian Air 370 that took off from the Kuala Lumpur airport toward a flight toward China and just disappeared less than an hour after being airborne. The conclusion is that the flight, as the government officially said, that the flight ended in the Indian Ocean, and today, day 45, the search continues, hoping to find some kind of indication of a wreckage in the sea. Well, we've had any number of... CNN put every possible explanation as to what could have happened to this plane, including even did it end up in the Bermuda Triangle? Did it end up in a black hole? You know, I even saw some atrocious, those atrocious newspapers at the checkout. The plane was seen on Mars. I mean, it's gotten ridiculous. Any number of theories as to what had happened there. But, of course, it's all conjecture. We won't know until something is found. But, of course, until that is found, everything is up for grabs. Everything is just theory. But some theories are more credible than others, and let's discuss the tone. This is more recent of CNN's coverage. They've put together a very impressive panel after panel of professional people, military people, consultants of all types, people who know all things about airplanes, and still everybody agrees nobody knows for sure what has happened there. Let's take a listen to the most recent, one of the most recent pieces of coverage from CNN, and listen very carefully to it.
The Bluefin 21 has scanned about half of the area where pings were detected that could be from the black boxes of the missing Boeing 777.
CNN aviation analyst Mary Schiavo joins us now. Mary, good morning to you. So we know that there is a cyclone near the search area. I'm wondering how much of an effect is the weather going to have, do you think, on today's search?
Well, it will affect the ability to search. It won't affect the Bluefin underwater, but deploying other assets or once they get the Bluefin out, putting it back down again, it could affect that because it may not be safe for the ships. But once underwater, the Bluefin can perform just fine. It shouldn't affect it too much. More likely what will affect is the plans for searches after this mission and after the Bluefin completes its search underwater today.
So, Mary, we know that the pinger batteries are likely long dead. There's been no debris that's been reportedly seen. However, the transportation minister, Malaysian transportation minister, called this weekend a critical juncture. Why is this weekend so critical?
Well, because they anticipate the Bluefin, the underwater autonomous vehicle, finishing its initial assignment, its initial job of mapping the floor of the immediate area around the four pings from believed to be from the black boxes. And then once that's done, which it should finish up within the week, then both the Australian Joint Task Force and the Malaysians have said they need to get together and decide what they're going to do next. Most likely it will involve deploying a lot more assets, towed, sonar, and perhaps other vehicles to search a wider area than what is originally thought necessary. They were hoping to find it right around the area of the four pings. If that doesn't turn out to be the case, then they're going to need much more.
Well, and speaking of much more, I mean, we know that the Malaysian Transportation Minister says that the search won't end if the Bluefin comes up empty. You mentioned this towed pinger locator, which is what they used before to even help narrow down the search area. What else could they actually send down?
Well, it was towed sonar, and they could use additional sonar vehicles. They can use other vehicles that can go deeper than the Bluefin 21, and that may be necessary. There are also vehicles that can be manned that they can send down. And there's even talk, again, about using submarines. I mean, the submarine, not just the unmanned little submarines. But I think the next step would be the towed sonar and perhaps other underwater vehicles that were like those that were used on the Air France search and recovery.
Considering the lack of any debris, I mean, as much as a carry-on or a floating seat or any more of these pings and finding the black boxes, when you look at the calculations using Inmarsat, do you believe that they're searching in the right area?
Well, I believe they're searching in the only area right now they know in which to search. Whether this is going to turn out to be the right one or if they have to expand it, time will tell. But the lack of wreckage material in that area doesn't surprise me because it was so long before they got to that area. I mean, wreckage floats away, and I won't say in a hurry, but with the currents, it can move, 50 miles a day. And they didn't get there for several weeks because there were lots of false starts. At first, it was in the South China Sea, and then they were searching for where it went next. So that doesn't concern me. What concerns me more is the fact that the Bluefin is now down on its eighth mission, and it hasn't seen a thing, and it's searching in the area of the pings that were located with the towed ping locator. So with those being the most promising leads and those search areas quickly coming to an end, the next step is, I would say, the critical part, because they're going to have to decide where to look next, expand the current area or go further south or north.
Yeah, well, we saw what happened with Air France 447. 2 years later, they found the wreckage. So I guess we'll remain hopeful on this one. Mary Schiavo, thank you very much.
Well, that's Mary Schiavo, who is no ordinary person. She was a former Inspector General of the United States Department of Transportation. And she's now in private practice representing air crash survivors and undertakes a number of investigative – she appears, I should say, on a number of investigative programs, including Frontline. Now, so we got from her – it took a while for them to even decide where the best and most likely place to search should be, okay? And they began the search. They found nothing so far, and this new piece of equipment, which is an unmanned kind of mini sub, has turned up nothing so far in eight dives. Today, we still have a contingent of aircraft carriers and planes scouring the approximate area that they think the wreckage is likely to be. But still, I mean, nothing definitive yet. Absolutely nothing definitive. Well, an interesting thing struck me when I was, scouring to try and find out what theories might be out there that might make sense. One that makes sense comes from Malaysia, as a matter of fact. And it comes from a person who used to be a major political advisor. He was the political secretary to the fourth prime minister of Malaysia, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. He's the author of three bestsellers, Future Fast Forward, Brainwashed for War, Programmed to Kill, and the shadow moneylenders and the global financial tsunami, which all have been published both in the United States and Malaysia. He is a Malaysian of Chinese descent, and he is also a peace activist. His name is Matthias Chang, and he wrote a very interesting piece. I will read it to you. It says, "Disappearance of Malaysian Airlines Flight MH370, the trillion-dollar question to the U.S. and its intelligence services." So subhead says, "Malaysian media should pose critical questions to the U.S. and its intelligence services and not to the Malaysian government." I begin. Let me state from the outset that I totally agree that with the press statements by Malaysia's defense minister and acting transport minister, Datuk Seri Hishamahuddin Hussein, that, quote, "We have conducted ourselves fairly, responsibly, and history will judge us for that," unquote. And to a mischievous and presumptuous question from the correspondent of the Financial Times, Datuk Seri, with confidence and integrity, rightly said, without any fear of contradiction, that, quote, "I don't think we could have done anything different from what we have already done," unquote. The Financial Times, CNN, and other foreign media ought to pose similar questions to the U.S. and its intelligence services and stop insinuating that Malaysia has not been transparent and or engaged in a cover-up. Foreign media should stop engaging in dirty politics. It is my hope that following the publication of this article, Malaysian mass media will focus on questioning the integrity of the U.S.'s assistance to Malaysia in the first 3 weeks of the SAR, meaning search and rescue mission, notwithstanding its recent offer of more assistance. I take comfort that my reservations about the U.S. and its intelligence services, as well as other intelligence services closely linked to the U.S., especially the British Secret Service, have been more than vindicated by Reuters in its news report on 28th of March 2014, entitled "Geopolitical Games Handicap Hunt for Flight MH370. And he quotes the article. "The search for flight MH370, the Malaysian Airlines jetliner that vanished over the South China Sea on March 8th, has involved more than two dozen countries and 60 aircraft and ships, but has been bedeviled by regional rivalries, with the United States playing a relatively muted role in the sort of exercise that until recently it would have dominated. Experts and officials say there was no real central coordination until the search for the plane was confined to the southern Indian Ocean, when Australia largely took charge. Part of the problem is that Asia has no NATO-style regional defense structure, though several countries have formal alliances with the United States. Commonwealth members, Malaysia, Singapore, New Zealand, and Australia also have an arrangement with Britain to discuss defense matters in times of crisis. As mystery deepened over the fate of the Boeing 777 and its 239 passengers and crew, most of them Chinese, it became clear that highly classified military technology might hold the key. But the investigation became deadlocked over the reluctance of others to share sensitive data, a reticence that appeared to harden as the search area widened. Quote, "This is turning into a spy novel," unquote, said an envoy from a Southeast Asian country, noting it was turning attention to areas and techniques few countries liked to publicly discuss. Ultimately, the only country with the technical resources to recover the plane, or at least its black box recorder, which could lie in water several miles deep, may be the United States. Its deep-sea vehicles ultimately hauled up the wreckage of Air France 447 after its 2009 crash into a remote region of the South Atlantic. While Putrajaya has been forced to reveal some of the limits and ranges of its air defenses, the reluctance of Malaysia's neighbors to release sensitive radar data may have obstructed the investigation for days. At an ambassadorial meeting in the ad hoc crisis center at an airport hotel on March 16th, Malaysia formally appealed to countries on the jet's possible path for help, but in part met with polite stonewalling, two people close to the talks said. Some countries asked Malaysia to put its request in writing, triggering a flurry of diplomatic notes and high-level contacts. Quote, "It became a game of poker in which Malaysia handed out the cards at the table but couldn't force others to show their hand," unquote, a person from another country involved in the talk said. As in the northern Indian Ocean, where Chinese forces operate alongside other nations to combat Somali piracy, current and former officials say all sides are almost certainly quietly spying on and monitoring each other at the same time. One China Times Taiwan reported, "The United States has taken advantage of the search for the missing Malaysia Airlines flight to test the capabilities of China's satellites and judge the threat of Chinese missiles against its aircraft carriers," reports our sister paper, Want Daily. Eric Xie, chief reporter at Chinese language military news monthly Defense International, said the U.S. has more and better satellites, but has not taken part in the search for flight MH370, which disappeared about an hour into its flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing in the early hours of March 8, with 239 people on board. Xie claimed that the U.S. held back because it wanted to see what information China's satellites would provide. "The above is the reality which we have to confront." This is now Chang writing again. "Therefore, desist any attempt to label the above mainstream media articles a, quote, conspiracy theory. Reuters has let the genie out of the bottle." Malaysia's Minister of Transport hints of Malaysia's difficulties as hands were tied by intelligence protocols and or refusal by the relevant foreign intelligence services and diplomatic reluctance, but our local media failed to appreciate the nuances of his statements by not directing their questions at those parties that have failed Malaysia as their neighbor and in their duties under various defense treaties and arrangements. Malaysian media, please read at the minimum three times the sentences in bold, I just emphasize them, and wake up to the reality that our country has been badly treated, even though our country put all its national security cards on the table so that countries whose nationals are passengers on flight MH370 could come forward with sincerity to assist in resolving this unfortunate tragedy, which is not Malaysia's making. Malaysia is but a victim of this tragedy, whose plane, MH370, was used for a hidden agenda for which only time will reveal. In my previous article posted to the website on the 27th of March, 2014, I exposed how Israel is exploiting the tragedy to create public opinion for a war against Iran, a Muslim country that has close ties with Malaysia. At the outset of the search and rescue mission, all concerned stated categorically that every scenario, no matter how unlikely, would be examined critically with no stones left unturned. Terrorist hijacking, suicide mission, technical failures, inadequate security, criminal actions of the pilot and or co-pilot, etc. Given the above premise, families of the passengers and the crew of MH370 have every right to ask the following questions of the U.S. and other countries that have sophisticated technologies to track and monitor airplanes and ships in all circumstances. Such questions should not be shot down by those who have a hidden agenda that such queries amount to, quote, conspiracy theories. Far from being conspiracy theories, we assert that the questions tabled below and the rationale for asking them are well-founded and must be addressed by the relevant parties, failing which an inference ought to be drawn that they are complicit in the disappearance of MH370. Let us begin. And here he begins to list a number of questions that ought to be asked. 1. Was the plane ordered to turn back? And if so, who gave the order? 2. Was the plane turned back manually or by remote control? 3. If the latter, which country or countries have the technologies to execute such an operation? 4. Was MH370 weaponized before its flight to Beijing? 5. If so, what are the likely methods for such a mission? Biological weapons? Dirty bombs? 6. Was Beijing, China, the target? And if so, why? 7. Cui bono, meaning, who benefits? 8. The time sequence of countries identifying the alleged MH370 debris in the Indian Ocean was first made by Australia, followed by France, Thailand, Japan, and Britain via Inmarsat. Why did the U.S. not offer any satellite intelligence until today? And that today he is dated now, that would be March the 29th, as he's writing this. Prior to the search of focus to the Indian Ocean, this is question number 9. Prior to the switch of focus to the Indian Ocean, was a search and rescue mission in the South China Seas used as a cover for the deployment of undersea equipment to track and monitor naval capabilities of all the nation's navies competing for ownership of disputed territorial waters? Reuters, as quoted above, seems to have suggested such an outcome. 10. Why was there no focus, especially by foreign mass media, on the intelligence and surveillance capabilities of Diego Garcia, the strategic naval and air base of the U.S.? 11. Why no questions were asked whether the flight path of MH370, if, as alleged, it crashed in the Indian Ocean, was within the geographical parameters of the intelligence capabilities of Diego Garcia? Why were no planes deployed from Diego Garcia to intercept the unidentified plane, which obviously would pose a threat to the Diego Garcia military base? 12. The outdated capabilities of the Hexagon satellite system deployed by the U.S. in the 1970s has a ground resolution of 0.6 meters. What's more, The present and latest technologies boast the ability to identify objects much smaller in size. Why have such satellites not provided any images of the alleged debris in the Indian Ocean? Were they deliberately withheld? 13. This is a very interesting question. On April the 6th, 2012, the U.S. launched a mission dubbed NROL-25, consisting of a spy satellite from the Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. The NROL-25 satellite was likely rigged with synthetic aperture radar, a system capable of observing targets around the globe in daylight and darkness, able to penetrate clouds and identify underground structures such as military bunkers. Though the true capabilities of the satellites are not publicly known due to their top secret classification, some analysts have claimed that the technology allows the authorities to zoom in on items as small as a human fist from hundreds of miles away. How is it that no imagery of MH370 debris was forwarded to Malaysia, as this capability is not classified, though other technologies might well remain classified? 14. Could it be that the above capabilities were not as touted? 15. In December 2013, the U.S. Atlas V rocket was launched carrying the spy satellite NROL-39 for the National Reconnaissance Office, an intelligence agency which is often overshadowed by the notorious National Security Agency, only it scoops data via spy satellites in outer space. The NROL-39 emblem is represented by the octopus, a versatile, adaptive, and highly intelligent creature. Emblematically, enemies of the United States can be reached no matter where they choose to hide. The emblem boldly states, quote, "Nothing is beyond our reach," unquote. This virtually means that the tentacles of America's world octopus are spreading across the globe to coil around everything within their grasp, which is, well, everything. Yet the U.S., with such capabilities, remained silent. Why? It cannot be said that it is not within the realm of probabilities that the U.S. may not want the plane MH370 to be recovered if rogue intelligence operators were responsible for the disappearance of MH370. If the above questions have been posed to the U.S. and other intelligence agencies and answers were not forthcoming, I take the view that the Malaysian government ought to declare publicly that our national sovereignty and security have been jeopardized by the disappearance of MH370, and that the relevant intelligence agencies have been tacitly complicit in the disappearance of MH370. By coming out openly to explain the predicament faced by our country, Malaysia may prevent a hostile act against a third country. I therefore call upon Malaysian mass media to be courageous and initiate such inquiries as only the U.S. and other intelligence agencies can give definitive answers to the above 15 questions. It is futile to demand answers from Malaysia, as we are not in any position to supply the information, as we do not have the capabilities of the global and regional military powers. Malaysians must unite behind the government so that our leaders need not feel that they are alone shouldering this enormous burden. And that was written by Matthias Chang. I've been trying to reach him. But so far, no response. But it is very much a different set of questions that we've been hearing, different from what we've been hearing so far, wouldn't you say? We've been hearing all kinds of things, but we're not hearing these kinds of questions from our own media. And this, again, attaches to the ongoing issues that we have when we do our media literacy. You listen for what is not being said. You listen for questions that are not being asked. And you know that this effort, now you can see the coverage by CNN being purposeful propaganda. The idea is that they must convince you that everything is above board, everything is transparent, and there is this sincere effort to solve this problem. And, of course, they have already done a great job of setting up the Malaysian government, as I had said before. They blame the Malaysians. They don't know what they're doing. They're confused. Things are crazy, as if every country ought to have these things ready to go. They're doing the best they can with what they have. And as he outlines here, the United States normally dominates these things. All of a sudden, it takes a step back. But it has not answered these questions. And, of course, it hasn't answered them because they haven't been raised. Has CNN raised any of these questions? Not so far. They're busy talking about the plane that might have gone into the Bermuda Triangle and the black hole. And their maps and their charts and their great visuals and all kinds of great things going on, except the important questions that have not yet been asked. And I thought this was important because it comes from a Malaysian point of view. And I've also said that one of the great drawbacks of CNN is here's a story occurring in Malaysia and we don't have Malaysians reporting on it. They're not qualified to tell their own story. They block them out. This happens all the time. These are multilingual people. And they have no say so far in any meaningful way in coverage of a story that deeply affects their nation. Well, ponder that. We will pick that discussion up, I'm sure, later on this week. But I thought I would share that with you because these are the things that we need to start thinking about. Never mind what they tell you. Start thinking about what you ought to know by now. These are logical questions. I want to talk about, oh my Lord, the NBC, not NBC, NBC Universal, which is Bravo, of course, has seen a wonderful, fantastic return on their investment in The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And last night, the first part of a two-part piece on the reunion. This is now the summing up of what happened in season 6. This thing has taken off like a jet plane, making them tons of money, and it was, advertised up the yin-yang. You had all kinds of ads. You must see this. You must see this. And, of course, what they're saying is you've got to see two black women fighting each other, calling each other all kinds of horrible names, trading insults, cussing, carrying on with if the plunging necklines were to plunge any lower. it might not even have been physically possible to contain the old mammary glands, but everybody's literally is busting out of their clothes, tons and tons of, I don't think there's a horse in Central Park or New York City with a real tail anymore. They're all wearing tons of somebody else's hair and made up, and I'm saying, my God, this is 2014.
We do not pay attention to those who have a motive to in any way manipulate or use the political system.
I'm hearing something bleeding through. And in the mix of this all, the one who is doing the fighting is none other than the granddaughter of Hosea Williams, an icon of the civil rights movement, who thought, by the way, in one of the episodes, that the Underground Railroad was actually a real train with a real conductor. She couldn't figure out how, you know, it was possible for a train to basically ride under a building. I tell you, this is where we are. And it upset me because so much has gone into this business of retrieving our collective dignity and pride. It should upset anybody that this is entertainment. But we have people performing like, you know, like clowns, as if they have no common sense, as if they have no sense of dignity. They don't care what they're doing. They're getting paid, and they're happy to get paid, even if it means just degrading and debasing themselves and black people, living fully up to stereotype and even going beyond it. And this is not the only such program. We have a whole bunch of programs like this where the women are just, you know, open their mouths and it's just foul stuff that comes out of it. And they look and they're so absorbed with themselves. Not one of them has anything going in a real way to give back to the community, or even just deal with life in a more dignified way. After all, you're on the television, you're in the medium of mass communication. And it was something to watch the host of this program, a white gay guy, and he is orchestrating this whole thing. He is upset. He's got to, you know, you see, here they all, everybody on the set had a civil rights issue, okay, including the host. He, you know, his group had to fight for assimilation too. His group had to fight for rights as well. And you have six black women. And this is what we see. This is what Bravo is thrilled to show us. This is the program that is a super performer for Bravo because it is selling advertising like crazy. People are watching this pathology. Every issue, every edition, every episode has pathology. And it's just reeking, stinking of pathology. And that is what is, quote, entertainment. And for these women who are making, you know, probably more money than they've ever made in their lives, it's a nice piece of change, maybe $300,000 to $700,000 per episode, or per season, sorry. And you making that kind of money. And in exchange, not only do you debase yourself, you, by extension, destroy credibility and the dignity of the folks who did all these things, put up with all these indignities, all these insults, all these physical abuses in order for you to give us this in 2014. I'm sure we're all so proud. It's disgraceful. utterly and completely disgraceful. Not that the media would want to do this. This is par for the course. But that these women, as allegedly smart as they are, would now be agents of propagating stereotypes and debasing themselves in the process. And their attitude is, I don't care. It's all about the money. Well, those are my offerings for the day. I hope they help you refocus a little bit for today. And we'll pick up that discussion. I'm sure you would let me know what you think. But Gary's in studio now. Gary, you there?
Hi, yes.
Great.
Nice to be with you. And very, very impassioned. And the kind of information your audience is used to. But boy, does this information have to get out to a larger audience around the world. My suggestion would be that if I'm sure that in the people listening right now, and there are thousands listening, why don't you synthesize what you have heard Utrice talking about and get it into small opinion pieces on different blogs so that you can start a conversation. And that's how we get the information rolling. And we can. By the way, just so you know, in the last 6 days, we had 9 million unique hits on Progressive Radio Network, 243,000 unique visitors. That means first time. So word is getting out, and since there's been no articles, no publicity, it's just word of mouth. When people find something inspiring, motivating, challenging, they dialogue on it, and that's the benefit of the Internet. We can still have input on the Internet. That's not censored yet. But they're wanting to do that. In any case, I've been sitting here listening to you talk, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
What I wanted to offer your audience is something that we all need, and that is we're all way too busy, especially those who are activists or those who are educators in the activists passing information on. We're looking at how many problems we have to solve, and we don't have enough time. And one of the biggest problems we have, and I see this all the time, is we're not taking care of our health. In the last week, 3 people I knew and had worked with at different times in my career, John Judge, who did some of the best work on the truth behind the Warren Commission and the RFK research, who really killed him, as well as Martin Luther King, and he died. He was only, I think, 63. Also, Michael Rupert died. He was, I think, 63 or 4. And Robert Knight. And Robert had his ups and downs. There were different times in his life where he was really streaming, and there were other times where he was hitting some blockages. And as we all do. And I was thinking, what if we just all stop for a moment and say, shouldn't we honor ourselves as far as making healthier choices? And the answer is we should, then why don't we? It's not because we lack information. We have millions of words that have been spoken, documentaries, broadcasts on health. We're just not applying them to ourselves. And we should. So because of my wanting to always try to find solutions for problems, this really came, Utrice, what I'm going to offer in a moment. This came from my own family, my own frustration. Coming from a very just common middle-class background in West Virginia, working-class family, they believed in authority figures only. So they smoked, they drank, they ate the wrong foods, they did not exercise, they didn't handle stress well. But you would never know that because, like a lot of people who grew up in the 1950s and 60s, a lot was hidden inside the home. And all those people today are gone. All my aunts and uncles, older brother, mother and father, they all died, and most died in their 50s or 60s. They didn't have to, but there's really no choice. Once you make the wrong choice, you're going to have an outcome. So I was so frustrated once when I went home, and I took a whole bunch of healthy food with me, and my mother never opened the bag. Never. It was irrelevant what I gave her. Books that were on the shelf that she never opened, vitamins she never opened, and yet she was proud of me She would, oh, there's Gary's in his book, but Mommy, I haven't read the book. I know, but you wrote it, and that's all that matters. No, I brought it here for you to read, to apply. So imagine the frustration when you're able to help strangers, but not your own family. So I wanted to make it simple. I went back, and I went into the lab, and I started working. And about a year later, I had about three products, green stuff, red stuff, and greens and grains. And about 2 years after that, Berry Blast. And I said, I don't care what my parents do. They're not going to change, but maybe I can convince them just to take this each day. If they just did this each day, it would make a difference. And so that's how I had to start looking at most people, including most of my audience. Because believe it or not, you trees, 95% of my audience, even long-term, 40-year listeners to my show daily, do not make the changes they should. They'll make a token change, a little change. Some, a small group, maybe 5 to 7% of my audience, will really make all the changes they need, and they're the ones living longer and healthier lives. So what I did is I created a product. It's an all-natural product. It's called Greens and Grains. Now, what makes it different from green stuff? It's simple. When I put all the ingredients together that I believe you should have in your body each day, it was more than could fit into a serving. In fact, it was a huge bottle. It was this gigantic bottle. And then I realized, A, it's too complicated, too much for people, and they're not going to take that. But I'm not one that likes to give little tiny amounts, and that's the game that's played in the marketplace. Oh, we'll just give 2 milligrams of something, but we don't have to tell people on the label. Well, then you're really not giving anything that's helping them. I want to give mega doses. When you're giving chlorophyll, fiber, probiotics, I want to give the amount that really makes a difference in someone's body. So what I did is I took green stuff and greens and grains, which were once one product, and I divided it in half. Half the ingredients went into green stuff, the other half went into greens and grains because it was too much to put in one. For example, in greens and grains, I give you good bacteria. These are the probiotic, but it's a blend of non-dairy and like a lactis and bifidum and acidophilus and longum. And these are ones you normally wouldn't get. These are non-dairy. How many? Well, some people would give you 1,000, 2,000. In each serving, I'm giving you 8 billion. Let me repeat that. 8 billion colony-forming probiotics, non-dairy. This is as good as you could possibly ever put in your intestine. And mind you, this is what really determines health. So you're getting megadose. Then I make it vegan, and I make it Circle K kosher, and it's raw, and it's all natural, and it's got the best organic flaxseed and sprouted grains, because regular grains are not easy for a lot of people to digest, but if you sprout the grains like amaranth and sprouts and spelt sprouts and kamut sprouts and quinoa sprouts, and everybody's into quinoa now, but the sprouts are even greater nutritional value. And there's no gluten. And I put those in. And then I put oat grass in there and pumpkin seeds and kamut, one of the oldest, most important grains in history. It goes clear back to almost the beginning of civilization. And then alfalfa. And then I put in sea vegetables. I put in sea vegetables you're not going to get, like the alaria and dulse and laminaria and ascophyllin. And then the anti-inflammatory bromelain, that's what you get from the core of pineapples, and Panax ginseng, and chia seeds, and ginger root, and yucca, and all that goes in there, and mixed carotenoids. So that's what, so all original and different from green stuff. So you take the two together, you have green stuff and greens and grains, now you've got your whole spectrum covered. Now everything I think is really important as far as the greens and the grains, the seeds, you got it. And it's in a delicious powder. It's been grown under the strictest conditions, and then it's dried without heat, and then it's blended into a powder. There's nothing else added. And then I put a little bit of cherry, fresh cherry juice in, and pineapple juice to give it a cherry pineapple flavor. And also there's special nutrients in cherries and pineapple. In fact, I think there's 9,000 milligrams, almost 9 grams of that. I don't know any product in the world gives you 9 grams of cherries and pineapple. So this is just a superstar. This is as good as it gets, what you can put in your body each day. Now, if you're going to go ahead and have good juices and good salads and sea vegetables and everything else, great. But I have got to assume most people are not. I got to assume most people, they're going to be busy in a day. They're going to be distracted. They can't run out and buy all this stuff every day. So this way, they just go to the cabinet. They don't have to refrigerate this. Go to the cabinet, and it'll still be fresh 5 years from now. They go to the cabinet, they open it up, and take a scoop that's in there, and they take a scoop and they put it in to their favorite beverage, whether that beverage is tomato juice, apple juice, orange juice, grape juice, rice milk, almond milk, whatever it is, and you drink it down. If nothing else, you know you've done something really good for yourself this day. That is why I invented it, and it didn't work with my parents or my family because no matter what I would do, I was kind of the joke in my family. But for a lot of other people, it has made an enormous difference for them. So you're getting
Gary,
all this, greens and grains.
You're offering this as a way of saying, I would like to encourage the audience to take advantage of this offer. And it's a way of saying thank you for supporting PRN and especially this program. How do people get these products, Gary?
Simple. And you're also getting, if you call today, you're going to get, as a gift, something that's not even out on the market yet. I've just finished it. It's my newest documentary called Embracing Your Passion. And in this documentary, you're going to see that millions of Americans are at a crossroads. We're faced with doing more of the same but wanting a different outcome. We want to be happier and healthier. We want to be at peace with ourselves, have better relationships. We want some joy and love in our life. And we want to live our passions. But we're also filled with resonating conflicts of doubt, insecurity, fear. And that blocks us. So what can we do to actualize the deepest passions in our life, to make our life happy and exciting again? Professor Bruce Lipton, Dr. Alberto Villado, Dr. Lama Suri Das, Dr. Robert Locke Kelly, Dr. Maggie Zellner, Aloni. These are great people. These are in the human potential movement, in the spiritual movement, these people at the top of the order, and it's all in this wonderful documentary. I'm going to premiere this on PBS stations in August, so I have it as a gift for people. So when you call today, here's the number you're going to call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You're saving, because this is an important show, and this money, by the way, every penny of it, not a penny goes to me, every penny goes to support Progressive Radio Network and Nutrice. You're saving $60. It's only costing you $59.95, so you're getting an enormous discount that no one else is getting. So call 877-627-5065. You're going to get a big jar of delicious-tasting, super powerful nutritional greens and grains, raw, all-natural, 8 million probiotics, everything else in there, the sea vegetables, it's all in there. Sprouted grains, everything you need is in there. Plus, this DVD documentary, Embracing Your Passion. So that's what we're doing. Give a call right now, 877-627-5065. Thank you.
And let them know that this is, you heard it on Lead Stories, your favorite program. We've come to the end of our program today. I want to thank you so much for being with us. But again, Gary, just repeat that number. And please do remember to say, Lead Stories is in the house. I need to know that you're with me.
They are. 877-627-5065. We're all in the house, all supporting this wonderful person you're listening to down in Florida, Eutrice Lead.
Coming up next, keep it right here, Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. Thank you. We'll see each other again tomorrow.